Happy New Year and welcome to the Scottish Football Show. Here's what we've got coming up. Lichty me, Ali Adams is taking the pushkiss. Hearts racing on Shankland's future. And D-Day for Dundee, Dark Blues, I a new home. Hello, dear listeners and viewers, if you're watching on our YouTube channel. Yeah, we've got one of those. Welcome to the final episode of the Scottish Football Show. Before the winter break. There's no VAR chat anyway. That's not going to happen. This is the only audio you need for your podcast ears. I am your host, Andrew Slavin, and joining me once again into the breach, TNT senior producer and occasional dog snatcher, Laura Brannan. Hello, Laura.
Hello. A little bit of context there. I was not stealing dogs over the Christmas break. I was over at Andrew's for Hugmoney, and his dog now adores me, and I will look after her whenever you want.
Yeah, Bonnie fell in love with you. Yeah. Anyway, joining us also, a man with a heart in Paisley, but he's probably bringing in 2025 right now because he's in Australia and they're in the future. It's Melbourne City's head of creative, Finlay Marks. How was your festive period, Finlay?
Pretty busy, actually. We were down at the beach, which is kind of what people mostly do.
Straight away mentioning the beach.
We only really made it to the beach for about half an hour one of the days. A combination of dreich weather and two tiny humans to look after meant that we didn't really get to enjoy it that much. But I was also working as well. The Melbourne Derby was just before Christmas, the 23rd of December. A sellout at Amy Park to watch a ripping 0-0 draw.
Oh, delicious.
Did slightly better a few days later, though. Melbourne City racked up their biggest ever A-League win, an 8-1 home win against Brisbane Roar. Brisbane, fun fact, one of Big Ange's old teams. And when he was the coach there, they were known in Australia as Roar Solona.
Wow. Well, after an 8-1 thumping, I suppose it's Brisbane Snore. Laura, what were you getting up to over Christmas and New Year?
I went back home, had some time off work. I got to go to two games. I was consuming the very cold nights of Scottish football. Went to St Mirren against Kelly, not a classic, very far from it. And I went to Motherwell against Livy, which was a much more enjoyable experience.
My best mate from back home actually went to the same St Mirren game, Laura, and took his little boy, who's about 5 years old, with him to his first ever football match.
Oh, God.
I said, how did he find it? And he was like, he was kind of bored after a little while, but he thoroughly enjoyed seeing all the planes going over because the flight path's obviously right next to Glasgow Airport. So he was thrilled with that. So I think they might be back for an evening fixture there at some point.
To be fair, the attendance was actually class. I think the Kelly end was sold out and it was just over 7,000 all in. So really, really good turnout at St Mirren Park, to be fair. Just a shame that the football and show was a wee bit disappointing.
Well, I was actually taking a Euro Club, Laura, West Ham, even though I was at Arsenal. I was working for Amazon, watching Davy Moyes stick it to Mikel Arteta, which was good fun.
And it was thanks to you doing that on Boxing Day that got me Christmas off, so thank you.
The dogs bark and the caravan passes. The caravan keeps moving. The caravan keeps going.
Gears a laugh, guys. It's been a chocolate booze fest. Present fest as well, hopefully, if you've been a good boy or girl. I've got no idea what day of the week is as well as, but some things never change in Scottish football. It has continued to cinch in our absence. So guys, fill us in the weird and wonderful, because I do think I know where we're going to start. And Laura, I'd like you to kick things off.
There is only one place to start. Stand forward, Ali Adams, a name that no one will probably have heard of unless you're an Arbroath fan before the weekend. And a name that will, for a while now, creep up as a brilliant pub quiz question because of what happened on Saturday. Now, if anyone missed this, Arbroath had to bring on a sub up front, but they ran out of subs to use. I don't think they'd filled their whole quota on the bench. So their only option was to turn to their second choice goalie. And he came off the bench. They're 2-0 down to Raith Rovers. Okay, league leaders, you're thinking, right, there's not much that's going to happen here. Now, not only did Ali Adams come off the bench and play up front quite well, he scored a goal. He brought it back to 2-1. And it wasn't just any goal. was it, guys? Come on, you must have saw this.
Do you know what? It kind of reminds me of James McFadden a little bit. Do you know what I mean? Like the way, like the kind of the turn and swivel, like there's only one thing on his mind and he puts his foot right through it. It's genius. It's one of those goals you always like to score.
I think the guy that posted a clip called it an absolute thunder bastard.
It's dictionary definition, thunder bastard. Dictionary definition,
word
it's
for
incredible.
It.
Rising all the way. It's just like you could not have hit the ball any sweeter. It's also one of those joyous moments, you know, when you're at a ground and a player hits a shot from distance. And as a football fan, you've just got that innate, that's in. I know that's going in. And you just enjoy the second and a half
know.
For it to sail through the air before it hits the back of the net and it ripples. It was just absolutely magnificent. What I didn't realise was he's actually got previous for this as well. I think it was when he was, before he played for Arbroath, one of his previous teams was Trinet. And there's footage of him playing as a goalkeeper, but taking a free kick from about 50 yards out. And it going top bins as well. So he has actually scored a few goals and they've all been absolute raspers. I wonder if he was just one of those players that has ended up professionally as a goalkeeper. But back in the day,
yeah.
He was probably the best player in his group of mates, could score from anywhere and all that kind of thing.
Weirdly, I played, not that I played at a decent level or anything like that, but anytime I played, you know, for good teams or whatever, the goalkeepers, about three of them, all used to be brilliant strikers, but they were the best goalkeeper in the team. It was one of those weird things. The best thing I enjoy about this goal is the celebration. He just is like calm down. he's not off to celebrate and enjoy it. He's like, yeah, I know what I'm doing, guys. I've got this. Yeah, decent.
No, fair play to him as well, because they pulled it back to two each after that. So they getting a point against the league leaders is no mean feat. What is worth maybe pointing out is the guy who did put this out on Twitter, he just filmed it off his TV. This clip got 7 million views.
Fucking hell.
Can you, right. The thing that annoys me though is this is just somebody filming off their TV. Now, if the SPFL, firstly, were allowed to do this live clipping, and secondly, just did it anyway, you think about the kind of marketing and promotion side of that the SPFL would have got worldwide, because it's something that everyone's talking about. The league then put it out a day later. But everyone had seen it by this point, you know, the likes of like Odds yep. Bible and Lad Bible, whatever, they'd all picked it up at this point. It only got 500,000 views from the SPFL.
Yeah.
So you think of the power that our leagues would have if we could actually post live clippings.
Totally.
Because we've got amazing moments that would be talked about worldwide. And this is just an example of it.
I totally, totally agree. It's something that's such a massive bugbear of mine, the whole kind of, oh, you need to wait 3 days to get the highlights of the game. And also the way that they do it, especially with the lower leagues, is they sandwich everything together. It's like, I would much rather sit and go through, say, like the Partick Thistle game with a 2-minute highlight package, or the Queen of the South game for a 2-minute highlight package, rather than having to steel myself to be like, right, I've got 25 minutes to sit through to try and sift through all the games that have happened in the lower leagues. I mean, just how many times have we talked about it? The SPFL have just got so much to learn in the way that they market themselves and attempt to try and grow the game. But stuff like this is so simple and easy to try and rectify that. It's something that the MLS are actually great at doing. I remember when it was Messi's first goal for Inter Miami, I seem to remember they put it out pretty much as it happened through the official MLS channels, and it blew up, obviously, as it would all over the world, but it's all views and revenue therefore coming in directly for the MLS. It just is such a no-brainer, and I don't know why they don't change it.
This should be nominated for Puskas Award.
Oh yeah.
Not just for the goal being absolutely class, but the story behind it as well. And just looking at, this is only Wikipedia, to be fair, like I was thinking maybe other Scots have been nominated for a Puskas Award. Only Caroline Weir, who had twice been nominated, but unranked. She was unranked. She never got into like the top three, because it goes to like gold, silver and bronze. I mean, imagine Ali Adams getting into this whole competition. Would be amazing. Let's get the traction on this going. It'd be so good.
All for that.
All for it. Finn, what have you got for me?
Well, I know this is from a couple of weeks ago, but it is probably the greatest shithousery moment of the season so far. Off the back of, you know, last pod we recorded, we were talking about Santa getting booed at Celtic Park at halftime. Rangers in their first home match after winning the League Cup got Santa to come out and parade it at Ibrox, which I just thought was just such a simple but funny thing to do. The other thing that I really, really enjoyed over Christmas was Raith Rovers, actually.
This is so good.
Raith Rovers basically made the announcement that Ian Murray, the manager, was signing a new 3-year deal by parodying the well-known scene from Love Actually, you know, where Andrew Lincoln's character kind of confesses his undying love for Keira Knightley's character at the door with placards and a tape player pretending to be carol singers. And they did it with that.
Oh, hi.
Who is that?
It's carol singers.
Oh, give them a quid and tell them to bugger off. We've got a game to prepare for.
I mean, the acting's astonishing. I think you're saying that Ali Adams might be up for a Puskas. I think Ian Murray might be up for an Academy Award for the way that he acted during this.
It was special. No, fair play to them. Because what I don't like is when they try and be clever and, well, they try and be clever, but it looks awful when they start like photoshopping like bobbleheads and stuff on, and they try and rip the piss out of certain scenes. See if you just do it exactly as it is, but put your own little slant on it. I think that was so clever. And to get him to agree to doing that was even better, because he was clearly absolutely hating life the whole way through it. But the fact that he has agreed to actually be put through that acting was, no, fair play to him. I've tipped my hat to you, Murray.
Have you seen this guy, James Scott _ish, tweeted out about this guy in London called Gustavo? And he's a bit of a fashion guy, this guy, Gustavo. But he's walking around London, like looking all suave and stuff, but he's just got a Livingston scarf on. Have you seen this? It's so bizarre, like this fashionista guy. And he does things on Instagram. I went on his page and he's like explaining what he's wearing.
He's not explained why he's got a Livy scarf.
No, but this guy says, basically, there's an influencer from London called Gustavo, and one of his key accessories right now seems to be a Livingston FC scarf. I have questions. And so do I. It's bizarre.
I think it just points to this whole kind of like the football fashion thing's become quite a big thing over the last number of years, and the kind of reigniting of an interest in 90s football kits and that kind of 90s wear it in general by a younger generation. It's just really funny because most of the time you see influencers and they might have something a bit more trendy, you know, like a Venezia away shirt or, I don't know, a Swiss second division like football scarf or something that's a bit trendy. It's just funny that this is still that same thing to them, but to us it's just like, why are you wearing a lovely scarf?
Yeah, what are you doing? Do you like spaghetti?
I did hear a rumour that David Martindale might be trying to sign Gustavo given the lack of resources that he's constantly on about, but there we go.
You think I'm going to answer a stupid question like that?
Right, so this year, we've got a lot of players going off in January to the Asian Cup and African Cup of Nations. So the Asian Cup is in Qatar from the 12th of January to the 10th of February, and the African Cup of Nations is in Ivory Coast, 13th of January to the 11th of February. So it's going to be an interesting time for a few teams having to manage without some key players, particularly Celtic guys, because if you look at the amount they've got, leaving Desa Maeda, Rio Hatate, Oh and Yang for South Korea, so Maeda and Hatate for Japan. Marco Tellio, who's not played for Celtic at all, will probably be going out for Australia. And then the other clubs that are seeing players leave, Martin Boyle from Hibs, Lewis Miller from Hibs, Rocky Bashiri from Hibs will also be leaving. Even Hearts are affected. Kai Rolls, Nathaniel Atkinson, Keanu Backus from St Mirren, he's off. And then it's quite funny, there's Roberto Nditi from Forfar will be going off to play for Tanzania. And you've got Frankie Masonda going to Zambia. God, there's so many. Jojo Wallacott for Hibs going to play for Ghana. And for Rangers, of course, Abdallah Sima playing for Senegal in the African Cup of Nations. So it's not easy when this comes around. And I suppose, like I said, Celtic are mostly the most affected team out of all of this. But how do you deal with this sort of stuff, Finn, who's kind of living in one of these countries?
It's really tricky. I mean, the thing with Celtic, I think Hatate is the biggest missed by far.
And he's not played much, though, to be fair.
He's only just coming back from injury.
Yeah.
And Maeda has kind of, again, been in and out of the team so far this season. I do think the team that's probably going to be hardest hit in terms of key players being out is probably Hibs, because Martin Boyle's just so important to them. And Lewis Miller has been really good, really consistent this season. And even Rocky Bashiri's been an integral part of their defence. So that whole right side, basically from defence to attack, is going to take a bit of a pounding. They've got some big games coming up after the winter break. I mean, Marco, you mentioned it, Marco Taylor's had about 7 minutes of game time under Rodgers so far this season. They won't even notice he's gone. It is really difficult, I think, but it's just something you have to try and manage. I think in recent years, of course, there's been a kind of consolidating of international calendars so that you don't constantly have players going off to international tournaments all the time. But I think it still begs the question, maybe you might have a bit more light on this, Laura, why the two biggest competitions in the Asian Federation and the African Federation still happen in the middle of the seasons that go on for most of the world. I know that's an incredibly European-centric mindset maybe to have, but at the same time, it's the middle of the A-League season, and most of these players playing in Africa and Asia are playing in Europe or adjacent regions that are in the middle of their seasons. I don't know why there's not this syncing up of the calendars. Why can't AFCON, well, maybe it's a weather thing, why can't AFCON be played closer to the summer or at a different point in the year, or we have more synced up international breaks where these competitions can happen? It's a bit of a shame when these players are caught in the duality of wanting to represent their club teams, but also having the honour of representing their countries at the biggest possible tournaments for them. It would be like, oh, you shouldn't go to the Euros because you should be playing for your club team. It's like, that's not fair to demand that of your players, but it's difficult. You're the ones paying the wages, you know.
That is an interesting point, Finn, because I hadn't even thought about the reason why it happens at this time of year. I'd need to see what each league plays in terms of their calendar, but I think weather could also play a massive part in that. One thing to point out, though, is exactly what you're going to say there about Scotland. Now, look at how much we're going to build up to the Euros this summer. And the excitement is going to really start building around probably April time. And then as soon as the league finishes, it's going to just ramp up for a good solid 3-4 weeks. These players, this is their equivalent to the Euros. And they're not really getting that sort of hype up or build up to it. And then they're going to go away, delve into this mentality of playing in this big tournament, and then have to come back and adapt to that as well. And it's a huge ask in terms of physicality, in terms of this part of the season, which we are currently going to take a break. Well, most of these players, obviously the four Fernier players aren't, but the majority of these players are going to be taking a break at this point to recoup their bodies, especially for this reason, because there's so many games across the season and they're not getting that break. So that's also going to then have a knock-on effect for the remainder of the season, because they're putting more demand on themselves. They're also missing a Scottish Cup game as well, which you look at the likes of Hibs, the fourth round of the Scottish Cup is one of the biggest games of the season for them. Okay, yes, they're playing Forfar, but it's still a huge fixture. They're going to be missing key players. So I can completely understand why the clubs aren't going to be happy about it. But at the same time, this is a huge deal for these players, and it's not fair to then not give them the respect it's due.
At the end of the day, there are plenty of clubs that have to deal with this kind of thing. And it's kind of a normal problem that managers and coaches are going to have to deal with. It's just, you know, it's tougher when you have so many players from those regions. But interesting times at Dundee, Laura. What's going on there? There's a new stadium plans being announced, I saw recently.
Yeah, there's an artist impression that was released just before Christmas of what the new stadium could look like. Don't know if you guys saw it. It makes it look very fancy. It's almost like a Hollywood version of the Levy's Ground, I think.
It's a very moody photo is what I think. It's really dark, really loads of blues, which makes sense.
Dense Park could only dream of what this stadium's going to look like. It's really impressive. So it's partly in the Camperdown campus. I don't know much about this area in terms of Dundee, apart from the fact that it is located. Now, if anyone has driven through Dundee or has went to Dundee as an away fan, you'll probably know it quite well. When you come off the A90 and you go along the Joe Carriageway, the one that where the speed camera sits, and I know this because I was caught by it once, it is along this Joe Carriageway where the big Tesco is. Before you normally take the turn off for Dens and Tannadice, it's going to be on the left-hand side of that as you're driving from the kind of south region north.
Near the wee spa by the chip shop.
To me, this seems like a really good location for away fans. Straight off the motorway, buses, cars can get to it really easily. Not great if you're getting the train. In fact, terrible if you're getting the train. I checked out the public transport for it earlier. You have to walk from the train station for a good 5-10 minutes, then jump on a bus for about 25, then do another 10-minute walk at the other side. Not ideal if you're getting the bus. Also, as a local fan, I think it's rubbish as well, because it's not really ideal unless you're jumping in your car. In saying that, though, I don't think Dens and Tannadice is that much better for local fans unless you actually live around the area.
Yeah.
In an ideal world, Dens and Tannadice would be down at the waterfront, I think. Walking distance from the city centre, where the V&A got built, right next to the train station. And unless you're really kind of building it there, it's really not ideal for supporters in any way.
It's funny because we had last year Anthony Joseph on the show to kind of talk about, and John Bleasdale actually spoke about it too, when Aberdeen brought out this idea of moving Pittodrie and having a brand new stadium like near the beach in Aberdeen and stuff like that. And the general consensus there was, until, you know, there are spades in the ground, you know, actually, you know, there is movement here. I'm not all for these kind of concept ideas. Like, what's the point in saying this is what it could look like? It's just, you know, let's wait until it's confirmed and it's going to happen and there's actually spades in the ground. It makes so much sense. Otherwise, you're just, you know, dangling this carrot in front of fans. That's just unfair. I don't know. Maybe that's just me.
I mean, it's been something that's been on the cards for quite a while now for Dundee, because I think they feel that Dens Park, what it would take to upgrade it and really bring it into the 21st century, you might as well just build a new stadium. I totally get that thing, Laura, about you're wanting the stadiums to be in the best part of the city, but if it's just, it's a total non-starter in terms of real estate and upheaval to those parts of the city and everything. If you were to build it down at the seafront or whatever, I mean, it would look great, but it's not practical. And also the way that city planning tends to happen now, this isn't something just in Scotland or the UK, this is worldwide, especially in areas where they're trying to regenerate, taking things like sports teams or whatever to more, I wouldn't even say outskirts, a bit Camperdown is certainly towards the edge of Dundee as you enter the city, makes sense, because they want to regenerate these areas. So rather than making the city centres even more dense and difficult to get in and out of for everybody, that's people visiting and locals, you want to try and spread things out a little bit. Is it ideal for the fans? No. But part of that regeneration can also be potentially improving the transport links, which I think is something that has been long overdue in Scotland in most major cities for 50, 60 years. The way that public transport is used, it's like if you don't have a car, you can't really get around properly. You have to wait ages for buses. Trains are useless. Like, we know this is a Scotland-wide problem. But I think the bigger picture as well, football stadiums can't really, I don't think, survive just being football stadiums going forward. They have to be more than that.
Totally.
And we've seen this as well with, you know, Rangers have just finished completed building the Edmondson House, which was the derelict building beside the stadium, which it takes an investment up front, but in time, you know, they're selling tickets now for away matches, £5 in there or whatever. They're doing gigs in there. They recently held their AGM in there. That's the kind of thing that they want to be doing. If you're building a stadium that can be a multi-purpose area, and that's what they definitely see it as, hosting music and entertainment events, multi-use stadium is what they're calling it. There's chat of there being a 250 capacity beer hall there, a hotel, all of these things. Those are the important things of regenerating a city. Mm-hmm. We've seen it in recent years as well with St Mirren taking it to the Fergusley Park area of Paisley, which was one of the most deprived and rundown parts of the town. And, you know, looking at the housing, it was dreadful. I made a documentary in college when I was there and filming it as it was being built. And it's like, you know, houses literally without roofs. It looks like a bomb site. And now the regeneration of that part, having St Mirren be in that part of the city, has really helped with the regeneration of those areas. So it's a difficult one, because you've got the ideal scenario of where you want these stadiums to be in for the ultimate fans experience. But in real terms, it needs to be something a bit more pragmatic and wholesale in trying to develop not just the furtherance of these football teams, but the cities that they're part of as well.
Yeah, I just keep thinking that what is the point in dangling this carrot? It's utterly pointless. Just until it's really going to happen, then put your artist impression for what it will be. Do you know what I mean? Or, and things can be adjusted afterwards, because you've signed the deeds for the land and all that jazz. Because it's just pointless, and it pisses on fans a wee bit, because at the end of the day, they just had their match recently called off for a waterlogged pitch as well.
Twice.
So there you go. It's like one of those things of like, we know this isn't good enough, but
the thing. Yeah. I think it's one of the worst stadiums in the top division. I actually say it's quite easily the worst in terms of how it looks to outsiders. If we're trying to market the game, the whole main stand is just horrendously built to have your fans so high up and far back, and you've just got ad boards everywhere. It's not nice to look at. You've got the pitch is obviously not coping with the winter right now, but at the same time, it'd be kind of sad to lose the novelty of having two stadiums on the one street. It's such a lovely part of Scottish football. I love the whole aspect of the players walking to the grounds for the derby. It's such a lovely part of Scottish football that's quite special, and it would be quite a shame to lose that.
Yeah, especially when you've got who's the hard man in EastEnders, or pretends to be hard man?
Danny Dyer, wasn't
Danny Dyer is like, I've gone to Dundee and I'm shitting my pants. This is Dundee. 100 metres that way, it's Dundee United. I'm shitting my pants. Oh my God. Yeah, that would be a sad one to lose. You said things, you know, it's not nice to look at Dundee, but Dundee's legendary player, and who is lovely to look at, Charlie Adam, got his first managerial role. He's taken over from Fleetwood Town, replacing Lee Johnston. Remember him at Hibs? He was such a success. He ended up at Fleetwood and only lasted 22 games.
Can I just say something that blew my mind, because it's written in the script here? Laura and I were talking about this off camera. Lee Johnston was appointed to Fleetwood Town after they sacked Scott Brown. So this is in September. So he's been there September to December. So a couple of months. He's already managed them for 22 games in that time period. I was like, I know there's a lot of games in the lower leagues in England, but that's like, is it like a 98 game season? Is it like Major League Baseball? Like, that's insane. But yeah. Clubs. It was crazy. I mean, Fleetwood Town just seems to be this revolving door for managers that have utterly no experience, but are kind of well-kent in the game. Joey Barton, Scott Brown, you know, Lee Johnston doing a cheeky little stint there. Now Charlie Adam coming in. I hope he lasts longer and has a better time there than some of those names. But
most famously for Fleetwood was Mickey Mellon, who took them out of the non-league all the way up to the League One. So yeah, Dundee United fans might like, well, did they like Mickey Mellon?
I don't think he was long enough there. Long enough.
He was only there for a year. Only there for a year. But other Scots joining Charlie Adam at Fleetwood: Maurice Ross and Ross Wallace, which is not easy to say fast, but I achieved quite well. Their assistant, Maurice Ross and Ross Wallace. So it's like, I don't know, they should be detectives or something like that. Maurice Ross, Ross Wallace, get yourself to the crime scene. But yeah, they lost to Shrewsbury 3-1 on New Year's Day. Good luck, Charlie. Good luck, mate.
There is the full-time whistle! And there is the roar from the Celtic fans, which tells you that Celtic have picked up a monumental victory this afternoon. Celtic 2, 10-man Rangers 1.
We are not going to go and look at every game that we missed over the last couple of weeks, because there's been hundreds of them. So we will focus on a couple of the talking points from some of the key matches up and down the divisions. And Finn, I have to really point out the 2-1 victory for Celtic over Rangers to kick things off, because It was a big moment for the league season, really, because Celtic not having a great time in December. If Rangers had won it and then won their remaining games in hand, it was looking like Rangers were going to go top of the league. But Celtic, in your opinion, was the best team on the day, probably?
Yeah, I'll try and be really brief in summing this up, but I don't think that the game told as much that we didn't already know. I don't think there's an awful lot between the sides this season. Rangers are pretty wasteful and impotent in the final third, which has been a real problem so far this season. And Celtic, even when they're not playing well, have big game players that can turn on moments of magic. It felt like it was a game of moments. All three goals, I felt, were really good strikes.
Yeah, they were all great goals.
That's what settled it. Obviously, there's been a huge amount of noise around the whole VAR stuff, which I just find incredibly tedious and boring. I mean, there is something really odd about the whole penalty situation around the handball from Johnson, and that's on Willie Colum. I don't think you can really look at it any other way than just a monumental cock-up. Kind of similar to the Scott McTominay goal against Spain, I felt, where they've given it for one thing in match and then said it was something else later on.
Which, by the way, we still haven't had the audio from, even though the SFA requested it. So Celtic fans and Rangers fans, get in line, because I want that one first.
Sky summed it up pretty well, though, when they showed that the Rangers player was offside anyway. The fact that there was no penalty means that there was the right outcome in the end, rather than making the referees look like complete morons.
Totally. But they've got to the right decision through the wrong working. And it's more that I think Colum's realised that there's a mistake. Thankfully, he's been able to be like, oh, it was offside, because it just wasn't talked about the time in Sky mentioned that in the commentary. But also, Nick Walsh, man, he just shat the bed, I thought, majorly. Bernardo and Johnson should both have walked for second yellows, which are textbook second yellows.
But I thought you weren't going to go into this in great detail, Finn.
I'm coming back to the bigger point here, because it's not the reason that Rangers lost the game is because they didn't get a penalty or players didn't get sent off. The whole chat about referees, and this is not just this game, every week, the whole chat about conspiracies and cover-ups and all of this stuff, it's just so immensely boring. I saw a brilliant tweet from Nick Miller, writer for The Athletic, who we know from Totally Towers back in the day.
Nick's a legend.
And he summed up pretty much what I think about a lot of modern football around VAR and refereeing when he wrote, off the back of some other contentious thing that happened in the EPL this weekend, he just wrote, football is now just a way of killing time between arguments about refereeing decisions. And that's what I feel like it is so much of the time. But anyway, to go back to the main stuff. Yeah, it's so boring. The main stuff about the football, it didn't tell us anything that we didn't already know. Rangers are down to the bare bones, not just the bare bones, the scraping the bone marrow now. They're in desperate need of prayers, reinvigorating. I think Clement's done a brilliant job up until now. Celtic, I think, will drop more points this season. They're not going to go on a Postecoglou-esque run to the end of the season. The title race is far from over. I don't think this season will be settled by the Old Firm games. I think it will be decided by the games outside of that, and where Rangers and Celtic drop points against the other teams, because we've seen them do it so much this season. To me, the title will come down to who has the better transfer window. I think it's as simple as that. But, you know, they both got back to fairly regular form. Celtic beating 10-man St Mirren comfortably at St Mirren Park. Rangers beating Kilmarnock 3-1 with
and giving away a penalty.
A penalty going to the away team.
Which stopped them apparently breaking the world record for penalties.
Oh, who cares? Who cares?
So boring.
It's such a non-event. And it's only, but it's only league games. It's like the League Cup doesn't count even though it's the same official. It's just like, shut up. Shut up and move on. There's no conspiracy. Calm down. Just enjoy the football. Can we move on to a ripping derby at this point, please?
Even, a really good derby, yeah.
A one-nil derby.
Yeah, but this was great, because there was no VAR conspiracies, there was no ref talk, there was fans in the home and the away end, and there was an absolute peach of a goal that won it in stoppage time.
We're talking Hibs v Hearts.
And I missed the whole thing because I was sitting watching St Mirren lose to Kilmarnock. Yeah. But yeah, Shanklin's goal in the 93rd minute, I think it was. What an absolute beauty this was. I do not understand how there's even a debate right now of whether or not he should be on the plane to Germany. For me, he is the striker. I don't even know how anyone can argue the likes of Jacob Brown can be ahead of him. He is the player right now in the whole of Scotland who is most on form. And if he is not in that squad, come summer. something seriously has went wrong in the latter stage of the season, if that's going to happen.
He scored again against Livingston on Tuesday as well, and it was such a good finish, like outside the right boot. He was given enough time to think about it, but there's something distinctly different about Lauren Shanklin compared to our other strikers in Scotland, where he's just smarter. I think he's actually clever and he's got a great eye for goal. And funnily enough, I saw the stat where that goal against Livingston made him the first Scot to have scored in 6 consecutive Premiership matches since Lee Griffiths did it in 2015. Wow. So it's a good Scottish story in Scotland, and it just makes sense for him. There's no way, even if he goes on a barren run now, he's the league's top goal scorer. And that's because he started slow. But even if he's slow to the end of the season, he's got to be in Germany.
I think you make a really good point, Andrea, about him being quite different to a lot of the players that we've got. I think what Clark likes is fast players who work hard. And I wouldn't say pace is a huge attribute of Shanklin, but what I would say is he's incredibly smart and he's definitely matured as a player in the way that he's able to draw in the players around about. And we've seen him take on, and it's maybe the reason he didn't score so many goals at start season, a slightly deeper role with Hearts. But the way that then opens out the play for the rest of the team is really important to the way they play. Just underlining how important he is. And the stat blew my mind. After Shanklin this season, who's on, I think, 13 or 14 goals for Hearts, do you know who the top goal scorer for Hearts is this season?
Vargas?
He's tied joint on 3 with own goals. So that tells you how important...
Was that right?
Yeah. He's tied with own goals as the joint second top goal scorer for Hearts. So it just shows you how important and intrinsic he is to Hearts doing well.
Amazing.
And when Shanklin plays well, Hearts play well, because you've seen him go in this purple patch through December and Hearts have looked so steady and they're cementing their place in third in the table. So he's got to be on the plane.
He's got to be on the plane, but he's also, for Stephen Naismith and the rest of the club's sake, he's got to stay at Hearts. This transfer window, there's a lot of talk about him, a lot of clubs being interested in him. He's already been away to Belgium and it didn't really work out. He's came back and it's taken him a while to settle at Hearts. He's brilliant last season. He's doing it again this season. You know, it opens up the debate. Everyone's saying Celtic or Rangers, but...
I can't see him going this window. He's still got 18 months left in his contract. If he was to leave before Germany, it would be utter madness.
Well, if Hearts got... I would say if 18 months... If it's a Celtic or Rangers, they should hold out for a 10 million.
I don't think you've just shown how valuable he is there. I would like to think that Hearts would actually stand up for themselves and say, no, we don't need the money, we need the player. The next 6 months are so crucial to the team and the player himself. You can still get money for him in the summer. Might not be as much, but you can still get money for him. And if the likes of Celtic or Rangers are going to come in for him, that to me still reeks of the same old story of we're just going to mop up our biggest threats in the league and we're not going to play them, but we're going to take them in and we're going to take them away from beating us because we've done it, especially Celtic, we've seen it happen so many times, like, you know, Benjamin Seagrass, David Turnbull, Nadia Shifty, like how many times do we have to go down this route of, oh, they've scored a couple of goals against you and they're a threat, so we're just going to buy you up to silence you and essentially ruin your career. I would really, really like to think that Hearts and Shanklin himself have a lot more respect for themselves and say no to anyone that comes in this window.
If it gets to a certain point where the money, I know you said 10 million, I think that's kind of fanciful for a player with 18 months left in his contract playing in Scotland, but I don't think five's out of the question. And I think if you were pushing towards £5 million from one of the old firm or an English Championship side, because I think Norwich and a couple of other teams like that have been looking at him, I think that's fair. But it's where's the balance? What's the tipping point for Hearts? Because when you think about how important he is and his goals realistically could fire them to third place guarantees you at least Europa Conference League football, which is worth around £3 million. So by keeping him and not taking £3 to 5 million now, you are guaranteed at least £3 million to cover that if he stays and fires you to third place. So I think it would have to take a huge sum. I agree with you, Laura. I think they should hold out for as much as humanly possible, mm-hmm. because he's just so important to them and important to Scotland. We want him playing, yep. and playing well.
Totally agree. We should just have a quick look around the other divisions as well, because lo and behold, what a surprise. The Championship is fucking incredible. Okay, I know it's a two-horse race again, but we did have that last season and that was amazing. So Raith Rovers, as we alluded to earlier in the podcast, they lead the way, but they've got, what, 3-point lead at the top of the table? Dundee United have got a game in hand, so they could be all evens quite soon. Partick Thistle in third, but they're 9 points behind United in second place. So it's absolutely mad. Raith Rovers are scoring goals for fun. Dundee United had a pretty unconvincing December.
To be fair, Dundee United have picked up the last two games. They've scored six, conceded none.
Very true.
So they've had a very good... I think they also conceded the 0-0 just before Christmas. They didn't concede in the 0-0 just before Christmas as well. So yeah, very, very good corner Dundee United have turned in the last...
Do you know what's mad? Do you know what's mad about Dundee United? They've only conceded, what, seven or eight goals this season?
Their goal difference is insane.
It's unreal.
It is flying. If it comes down to goal difference, Raith haven't got a hope in hell's chance, because not only are Raith scoring goals for fun, they're also conceding at the back just as often. And we saw this with the 4-each game at Christmas time. Incredible. Absolutely brilliant for the neutral to be watching this, but there's just goals everywhere right now. And yeah, fantastic. Fantastic at the top of the Championship. To be fair, I think we're all a wee bit worried that Dundee United were going to run away with it. When they kind of went in that run recently, they were kind of opening up a gap. Like, as from neutrals across the country, we want the Championship to continue being this unpredictable nonsense that it normally is. So, yeah, really, really pleased the way it's kind of panned out over Christmas. And keep it up, please, because it's brilliant.
More goals from the second choice goalkeeper, please, as well. That's for the Championship. League One, by the way, I don't think anyone's going to catch Falkirk. The only unbeaten team in Scotland's top four tiers, by the way. They've only, conceded two goals in their last five matches. Calvin Miller, by the way, remember him? Coming through at Celtic, went down to England for a wee bit, came to Falkirk in the summer, and he's been totally inspired form this season. Second place Hamilton, though, they've dropped points on three occasions in December, so that's why things are looking very good for Falkirk. But by the way, Queen of the South had a fantastic December, guys. Moved up to fifth in the table, only a few points behind the playoff spots. Yeah, three wins and a draw. They go to Falkirk for the first match in for both the team's first matches in 2024, and it would be class if Marvin Bartley could end Falkirk's unbeaten run. That would be so good. Shall I wrap up League Two? Well, it's quite easy, actually, because it's only Stenhouse Muir that are going to go up. 11 points clear at the top and only one defeat for the whole season. Interestingly, though, for a team that we've highlighted a lot this season, the next team with the least amount of defeats are Spartans. Only three defeats this season. But they're fourth in the table. Still a playoff place. But they've been a total breath of fresh air this season. And like I say, only three losses in the league. But Clyde have still got a mountain to climb, even though Ian McCall has gone in. Been a few interesting results, but only draws. They're still 8 points from safety. 6 points adrift at the foot of the table because Elgin are just above them, who are like the only team they've beaten this season. That's worrying times for them. But interesting times for other clubs in League Two. So it's quite good fun. Shall we move on to some predictions for 2024, as it's a new year and I would like to hear your cheer?
We can't be having that, mate. You better get your finger out all right and make sure that you get the f***ing results.
What can we expect? What can we hope for in a January transfer window?
It's always a really interesting time, I find, the January transfer window, because you don't tend to find that clubs do business in January that then lasts for seasons to come after that point. Very rare that a January signing comes in and
big tasty really loan deal, innit?
Well, that's the thing. And as I was alluding to earlier, I do think both Rangers and Celtic need to do quite a bit of business over January. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. There'll be things like the Shankland potential move that might test Hart's resolve. So it always feels like a slight kind of like patch up type job. There's always a premium, I think, that you have to pay for players in January that you probably wouldn't in the summer, just because teams will know that you're desperate and wanting to bring in reinforcements or change things around a little bit. So I always find it a really interesting time of year. I always find that with the Scottish clubs as well, because of where we are in the food chain, you kind of need to tend to wait for the bigger teams and bigger leagues to do their business first. Mm-hmm. And then there's the trickle down thing where then players become available or move around. And that's why I think we get to see a lot of the big deals being done towards the end of the window. It's interesting, Rangers have already signed their first player on loan before Fabio the window Silva. Even opened. Fabio Silva. I don't know if it'll work out. We've had multi-million pound young signings coming into the Scottish League before and they've not done brilliantly. Ahmed Diallo comes to mind. But it's rare that we have a 40 million pound striker coming to play in Scotland. So
he was a Wolves transfer record, wasn't he, in the Premier League?
He was, and he's kind of struggled there, but he's had two good
spells. He's only 21,
spells.
Isn't he?
Yeah. He had two good spells last season in Belgium and then the Netherlands, where the new Rangers director of football, Nils Koppen, will know him from because he was playing at PSV. So I think he could be good, but I'm always excited. I love when it gets to this stage of the season and you get to see all the transfer rumours because things can actually happen. It's not just empty things to fill headlines. It's like players will actually move. I love this time of the season.
I always remember that it can be fun, like thinking back of like say Janinho coming to Celtic. I think Bellamy was another one that went to Celtic. I'm trying to think of any other.
Freddie Ljungberg was in January.
Freddie Ljungberg, who I think one game.
Robbie Keane as well.
Yeah, I was working with Freddie Ljungberg recently. For CBS. It was really weird.
Oh, I was at the Berwick Rangers Celtic game in the Scottish Cup when Freddie Ljungberg made his debut. He was not happy with those dressing rooms.
Was that the game he played against Berwick Rangers?
Yeah.
If I see him again, I'm going to ask him about it.
Roy Keane was a January signing for Celtic as well, wasn't he?
Because I think Robbie Keane definitely was.
Robbie Keane was. Is it just Celtic? Rangers must have had a good few absolute beezers.
They have. The reason I remember Roy Keane, because I think his debut was the Scottish Cup tie against Clyde, where Clyde beat Celtic 2-1.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure that was his first game.
He also came out and said that was a big mistake. He should have just retired. That was a mistake of his.
There was also the January when Celtic snapped up Stuart Armstrong and Gary Mackay-Stephen in the same day. I think that was only a few weeks after Dundee United had beaten Celtic as well. So I think that kind of... What I was saying about Celtic taking
your
their
idea.
Big threats.
Yeah. Wow, yeah. So we've just absolutely mullered Celtic in this segment. Nice one, guys.
I think this one is more about weighing up whether players are leaving at the end of the season or not and whether they're going to sign free contracts and if anyone's going to steal them at this point. I think that's where the kind of big stories are. The likes of Kilrus, his contract's up at the end of the season for Aberdeen. Mm-hmm. Now, he's been great since he came in. They're obviously going to want to keep a hold of him. David Marshall's contract's up at the end of the season as well. It looks like he's probably going to retire after this. I don't know. Goalies seem to kind of pluck out extra seasons out the bag from God knows where. Craig Gordon, Alan McGregor. David Marshall might shock us all, but Paul Hanlon, Lewis Stevenson as well, they're out of contract at the end of the season. I'm quite interested to see what David Turnbull does. His contract's up in the summer and I feel like now is his chance to get out of the club. He's not getting games and I fear that if he waits till the end of the season, he's going to slump off without a club and God knows what direction his career would take him in. But if he gets out now, well, there's still time. I think this would be a perfect opportunity for him to leave.
I think when you hear the noise coming out of Celtic that where Brendan Rodgers wants to add quality and not more projects, Turnbull's time of being a project is over. So yeah, it seems to make more sense.
He shouldn't be a project at this stage of his career. He should be quality at this stage of his career. And Celtic haven't given him that opportunity because he doesn't get a run. He gets the odd game and then he's out the team.
Well, that's not strictly true.
Sub.
That's not strictly true. I mean, he came in at the start of this season, scored two goals in the opening day, and we all thought maybe he is going to break through.
And then didn't get played consistently.
But then why is that? Is that just Brendan Rodgers and the coaching staff saying we just don't like him? Clearly, they see players that they think are better suited for the way Celtic are going to play.
Yeah,
and that's not a slight on David Turnbull. That just might be
tactics
or style
it's
or
not
whatever.
The club for him. It's not a club for him and get him out while he's still young and he's still got a chance.
Would you see him staying in the SPFL, Laura? Like, would you see him potentially going to like Hibs or Hearts or Aberdeen or something like that? Or do you think that because he's been at Celtic, maybe the level that he wants to try and get to, is to try and push himself at this stage of his career to the highest possible level? Do you think he should maybe take a move abroad or try and go to the English Championship? Like, what would be the best thing for him?
I think, going abroad, oh, wonderful. Even moving down south, the education he would get from that would be great.
Do you think he's that type of character, Laura?
I think he's quite a home. He's quite a homeboy. I think that would be quite a push for him. I think he would need to be pushed into it. I think if his family, his girlfriend are behind it, he would definitely consider it. I don't think he would himself take it on as pushing for that. Like I say, in Hearts and Hibs, technically, yes, it's a step down because he's been at Celtic for 3-4 years, but I don't think it would be, because for him, he would just see it as games, and the boy just wants to play games, and that is what he needs at this point. So if he's not snobby about it and just wants to play week in, week out, then these grounds, these clubs would be great for him.
That would be the key, really, because there will be clubs in Scotland that will not be able to match the wages that he'll be getting at Celtic.
Yeah.
It just won't happen. So if he's, like you say, if he's willing to just drop down in wages as well as that, then I'm sure something could be worked out, maybe not, maybe he can only go abroad. I just want to pinpoint one thing, is Ross County and them kind of battling potentially for relegation with the likes of Livingston, who are probably in this conversation as well, of like, how do they shake their teams up and change everything? Because I don't think, for one, Derek Adams would have came back to Ross County if he didn't get assurances from the ownership that money would be spent so that he could bring in his own players. But there's some key players there that are out of contract in the summer, like Jan Danda is out of contract. Jordan White, who has been a bit of a stalwart of the club for a while, doesn't score loads of goals, but can be a key player. And Simon Murray's got 11 for the season already after 25 games. Maybe he's someone they'd want to keep around. But you look at Livingston and David Martindale against, after Motherwell game, he absolutely lambasted his players, saying they're not doing well enough. And some of his players seem to be comfortable with being Livingston players, which I quite like that mentality of coming out of him, saying, like, you know, you should come here to get better and then we'll sell you on. But they need to dip into the transfer kitty and just to try and shake things up, because otherwise, I think Derek Adams would probably leave. He seems like a strong character.
Sorry, just to that point on Ross County, because I think the players that you've highlighted mentioned, especially Jan Danda, the goal he scored against Hearts over the Christmas period was just unbelievable. I think to have that level of player with that ability at a team with the greatest of respect like Ross County, you would do anything to try and hold on to them. But I think a lot of the teams towards the bottom half of the table, they tend to be these teams where you have players that come in for a season and a half, might do quite well, and then they just end up going back down south, probably to a lower level. I don't know how you rectify that in doing it. And you also see the ins and outs every summer, and teams like Ross County or Dundee or whatever have like 8 players leaving, but also 8 new players coming in. There's always these massive squad rotations happening. I'm not too sure if that will change anytime soon. They definitely need, I think, a bit of fresh blood, especially Livingston coming in. Martindale's talked about how his hands are tied behind his back with the financial situation at Livy. I don't know if there's much more he can do. I think some fresh faces across the board. I don't think there's any club that's going to be saying, no, I'm totally happy with the squad we've got so far. Maybe Kilmarnock. But I think most teams will be looking to get a few reinforcements in. So it'll be interesting to see what happens over the next couple of weeks.
Lots of interesting things to happen. Well, who knows? Maybe VAR will die. Maybe Scotland will win the Euros. And there will definitely be more conspiracy theories. That is an absolute dead on for 2024. Well, that's it for us for a few weeks. We're not going to be back until the football's back, but hope you have a couple of great weekends coming up. Laura and Finn, thank you for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure. So until then, go and listen to something else. Bye.